ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Prayers by Queen Kunti, text number, is it 15 or 14?
15.
So Kesha Prabhu did 2 yesterday?
No.
Yes.
Yeah? Mm. Okay. Because Narayani Mataji did text 11 on Sunday, Gopalandas did 12, so I thought it was 14. Okay, anyway, what to do? So I'll read 14 and 15. But first, I'll read the text. I'll read text 15 in Sanskrit. Yadyapi astram brahma shiras tvamogam cha pratikriyam vaish Navam teja asadya samashamyad brigudvaha yadyapi astram brahma shiras svabhamogam cha pratikriyam vaishnavam teja asadya samashamyad brigudvaha yadyapi astram brahma shiras tvabhamogam cha pratikriyam vaishnavam teja asadya samashamyad brigudvaha Okay, so text 14 Antastha sarvabhutanam atma yogeshvaro hari sva mayaya vrinod garbham vairatyaha kuru tantave Translation The Lord of Supreme Mysticism, Shri Krishna, resides within everyone's heart as a Paramatma. As such, just to protect the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, he covered the embryo of Uttara by his personal energy. Purport The Lord of Supreme Mysticism can simultaneously reside within everyone's heart or even within the atoms by His Paramatma feature, His plenary portion. Therefore, from within the body of Uttara, He covered the embryo to save Maharaj Parikshit and protect the progeny of Maharaj Kuru, of whom King Pandu was also a descendant. Both the sons of Dhritarashtra and those of Pandu belong to the same dynasty of Maharaj Kuru. Therefore, both of them were generally known as Kurus. But when there were differences between the two families, the sons of Dhritarashtra were known as Kurus, whereas the sons of Pandu were known as Pandavas. Since the sons and grandsons of Dhritarashtra were all killed in the battle of Kurukshetra, the last son of the dynasty is designated as the son of the Kurus. Text 15. O Shanaka, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Ashwatthama was irresistible, and without check or counteraction, it was neutralized and foiled when confronted by the strength of Vishnu, Lord Krishna. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said that the Brahmajyoti, or the glowing transcendental effulgence, is resting on Lord Shri Krishna. In other words, the glowing effulgence known as Brahma Tejas is nothing but the rays of the Lord. Just as the sun rays are rays of the sun disk, so this Brahma weapon also, although materially irresistible, could not surpass the supreme strength of the Lord. The weapon called Brahmastra, released by Ashwatthama, was neutralized and foiled by Lord Shri Krishna by his own energy. That is to say, he did not wait for any other's help because he is absolute. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmiltam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a very famous chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, prayers by Queen Kunti. In fact, Srila Prabhupada gave a lot of lectures on this chapter in the verses coming to be. Because these prayers are very highly glorified by all the acharyas and so many other devotees. So here in this section we see how the Supreme Lord Krishna in his Paramatma feature is protecting the son of Uttara, which is Maharaj Parikshit. And in text 14 it's mentioned that Maharaj Parikshit is pretty much the last progeny of the Kuru dynasty. So it's interesting here because originally the Pandavas and the Kauravas, they both are actually Kurus. Because if we go back a little bit, so the Kuru dynasty was, I think, started by Bharat Maharaj. And for a very long time, it's been coming down. And then there was this King Shantanu, yeah. Yeah, King Shantanu had one son by his wife Ganga Devi, whose name was Bhishma or Devavrata. So we'll just look at the history of the Kuru dynasty a little bit and try to understand why why the Pandus are called the Pandavas, why the five sons of Pandu are called the Pandavas, why they're not why they're not associated with the Kuru dynasty, and why the Kauravas are associated with the Kuru dynasty. So there's a bit of history to it. So we know way back there was Maharaj Shantanu, and from Ganga Devi he begot Devavrata, you know, or Bhishma. So Bhishma was his son, and naturally the Vedic system is amongst the Kshatriyas that the son, if he's qualified, then he becomes the king in due course of time. So when the king retires, the son who is the prince then becomes the king for the purpose of carrying forward the dynasty. In other words, to carry forward Vedic principles. So the purpose of the king is to deliver the citizens from the bondage of lust, as we hear in the Bhagavad Gita, to liberate people from lust and to take them back to Godhead. So that's the purpose. So the kings are always in great anxiety to have a son who can carry forward the dynasty. So if a king does not leave a son behind, then then that king has not performed his duty properly. So therefore they are in great anxiety to have a powerful and a unique son who can carry forward this culture of Krishna consciousness. And therefore they would beget many sons. In case one dies, the next one can take charge of the throne. So like that we see Maharaj Shantanu, he begot Bhishma or Devavrata. Then his name was Devavrata, not Devavrata. His name was Devavrata. And he was very powerful. And then one day Shantanu Maharaj, he was hunting, I think roaming around in the forest, and he came across, and he was attracted by this scent, and then he traced the source of the scent, and then he saw Satyavati. So Satyavati was the daughter of a fisherman. So her service was to transport people basically to carry people across the river,
one
bank to the other. And this is what she was asked to do, and she was doing. And then Shantanu Maharaj was very attracted by her and he wanted to seek her hand. So he immediately went to see her father. So when he saw her father, he requested her hand and he said, "Yes, I don't mind giving, but there's one condition. The condition is that her sons, the children you beget from her, her sons should take to the throne. And your son Devavrata should not become the king." And by that time already Devavrata was a prince. And he was going to become the king. And therefore Maharaj Shantanu, he was in great anxiety. He was very distressed. But at the same time he was very attracted by her also. He couldn't just let Devavrata not become the king. So he left in great distress. His heart was torn apart. Then after some time, Devavrata could see that his father was in so much lamentation. And then he inquired of his cause of lamentation and Maharaj Shantanu, he explained. And Devavrata didn't want to see his father lamenting a lot. So he approached this fisherman and he said, "Okay, let my father marry Satyavati and I won't ascend to the throne." And of course, as you know, in kingly life, there's a lot of intrigues. Even we see there was so much intrigue amongst the Kauravas. The Kauravas were trying to get rid of the Pandavas so they could take to the throne. And even recently, some years ago, we see even in Nepal, in the royal dynasty, there was intrigue.
King Mahendra.
King Mahendra, yes. He was the king, right? So you know, there's in palaces and all, there's a lot of intrigue. There's fight for power. So, because it's very attractive. So the fisherman said that, "Okay, even if you say you won't ascend to the throne, but your sons to be, they will say they want to become the king. And then they will cause intrigue and there will be diplomacy and there will be a lot of complications." So he said, "Even if you say, but your sons will somehow complicate things and they want to become the king." So then Devavrata said, "Alright, the way we solve this problem is I won't marry." So he took the vow of celibacy. He said, "I'll just remain a brahmachari, an Aishwarya brahmachari for my whole life." And when he took this vow, then the fisherman was convinced. He said, "Okay, you know," because back then whoever would take a vow, they would stick to their vow, unlike today. We say one thing, but the very next minute, we don't even acknowledge what we said. Or even if we do acknowledge, then we'll justify it in so many ways why we can't do it. So back then, if someone said something, especially like a Kshatriya or a Brahmana, they said something, then okay, that's like engraved on stone. It's not going to change.
But
Patthar ki lakir, yes. Thank you for the translation. So that was the caliber of people back then. So the fisherman was convinced and he said, "Fine." And when Devavrata, he took this vow from the heavens, there was this, he was called as Bhishma. I think the demigod said, "Bhishma, Bhishma." He's taken a terrible vow. Because for a Kshatriya, because Kshatriyas are in the combined modes of passion and goodness. So for them to be single is extremely difficult. It's very rare. So when he took this vow, thus it was like Bhishma was given this name. So he stuck to that vow. So then he took that vow and then Shantanu Maharaj married Satyavati. And in due course of time, they had two sons, Chitrangada and Vichitra Virya. So then, but Chitrangada, these two sons were very, very powerful, extremely powerful, in very, very strong, very strong. Their prowess was very spread, very far and wide. Their fame was spread because of they were very powerful and qualified kings. So much so that even in the heavenly planets, everyone knew of them. But in the heavenly planet, there was one Gandharva by the name of Chitrangada. And he said, you know, what's this? There's another person of my name. And he's like outnumbering my glories. So then he challenged him for a fight. And then there was a fight for a long time. And Chitrangada on Earth planet, he died. So now then the younger brother, Vichitravirya, he was put to the throne. So, but Vichitravirya died after 7 years because of illness. So now there was a big problem. There's no king. So, and Bhishma, he's taken the vow of celibacy. So he's not going to become that. And he took the vow that he won't take to the throne. So this was a time of emergency. And Shantanu was also not there. So then Satyavati, she was in great anxiety because she wanted to carry forth the dynasty. And so, but Chitrangada and Vichitravirya, they were married to Ambika and Ambalika. Is that right?
Yeah.
Ambika and Ambalika.
Yes.
And but Satyavati had another son whose name was Vyasadev, born from Parashar Muni. And Vyasadev had given her a benediction that whenever you need me, you just summon me and I'll be there at a moment's notice. So then she asked Bhishma, why don't you take to the throne, or why don't you beget children? And he just said, no, I've taken a vow, I'm going to stick to it. So then she thought about it, and then she was advised that in times of emergency, like even a brother can beget a child in the womb of the husband. She summoned Vyasadev, and then Vyasadev came, and he requested him to beget a child from Ambika. And Ambika was actually expecting Bhishma to come. She was expecting that Bhishma will come and beget a child from her. What happened was Vyasadev arrived. Because Vyasadev was summoned, he came straight from his tapasya. He was doing tapasya in the Himalaya, so he came. And, you know, ascetics are usually, because they're doing tapasya for so many years, they're not in a very clean state. So he had, you know, dreadlocks. He had very long dreadlocks. And he was like,
big beard.
He was in a loincloth, a very big beard. And he was very dirty. There was a very foul smell coming from him. So when Ambika, she opened the door, she was actually in a shock. She saw that, you know, who is this? Who is this personality? An ascetic. And then she was in great fear and shock. And then Vyasadev conceived a child. But during the intercourse, she actually closed her eyes. And as a result, in due course of time, Dhritarashtra was born, who was blind. He was very strong, very qualified, but he was blind because she had closed her eyes. This is an interesting science. And then Satyavati said, you beget another child. It's good to have few sons in case, you know, one dies or something. Because Dhritarashtra was, he told Satyavati that this child will be blind because Ambika closed her eyes. So then, again there was the same problem. How can he become the king? Because he's blind. So she requested, okay, you beget another child in Ambalika. So Ambalika was warned that Vyasadeva is going to come. And this is his condition. So you better be prepared. And so she somehow had some idea, and Vyasadeva came, and again she was shocked in great fear. Her complexion went pale. And as a result, Pandu was born, who was pale in complexion. So then Satyavati said, okay, you beget another child from Ambika, just in case. So Ambika was told, okay, again Vyasadeva is coming, so be prepared. So Ambika said, fine, but at the last minute she changed her mind and instead she sent a maid servant. She dressed her up, gave her nice ornaments, nice garments, and a maid servant was there instead. And when Vyasadeva saw her, he immediately understood what has happened. But because the maid servant served him very nicely, he was pleased and he got a child. And then because so he was Vidura, this child was Vidura because he was conceived of a Shudra woman. So then he said, he told Satyavati, okay, that's it, no more children, I'm going back to the Himalayas. If you need me, you call me, but I won't beget any more children. And then Vyasadeva went back for his tapasya. So in this way we see Dhritarashtra, Pandu and Vidura were born. So because Dhritarashtra was blind, he could not take to the throne, so Pandu became the king. And in due course of time, we know Pandu also quit his body. So then naturally the heirs of the throne were the Pandavas, headed by Maharaj Yudhishthira. So there was this intrigue, but Dhritarashtra wanted his sons to become the king, headed by Duryodhana. So there was this great intrigue. So we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and if we read the Mahabharata, we can read all the fine print how the Pandavas were, the Kurus, the Kauravas tried to annihilate the Pandavas by so many means, right from childhood. It's interesting that Dhritarashtra, he called his sons the Kurus. He didn't consider the Pandavas the Kurus, though the source is the same. So even we see in the start of the Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Kshetra Kuru Kshetra Sama Veta Yudhisava Mamaka Pandavas Chaiva Kim Akurvata Sanjaya. So he says, Mamaka Pandavas Chaiva. So in other words, Dhritarashtra says that that the my sons are the Kurus, not the Pandavas. So in other words, he's separating them from their rightful claim to the throne. So here in this verse, it's interesting, it's mentioned that Parikshit Maharaj is the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, because he is. So we see how Ashwatthama, he killed the five sons of the Pandavas, and then he also tried to kill the Pandavas and Maharaj Parikshit by throwing a Brahmastra. So anyway, that's a bit of history to the Kuru dynasty. So here in text 14, it's mentioned that Shri Krishna, the Lord of Supreme Mysticism, resides within everyone's heart as the Paramatma. So we understand that Paramatma is a feature of the Supreme Lord. So there are three features, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaneti, Shabdyate. So there's the Brahman feature, Paramatma feature and the Bhagavan aspect of the Supreme Lord. So the Paramatma feature is the localized aspect of Krishna. So they are non-dual, but at the same time there is a difference. So the Paramatma feature is a plenary portion of the Supreme Lord Krishna. So we have the three Vishnus. There's Mahavishnu, Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu and Shira Dakshaya Vishnu. So these three Vishnus are for the purpose of facilitating the material manifestation. That's the purpose. So from Mahavishnu, the material energy comes, and then Mahavishnu glances on it, and as a result the creation takes place, the primary creation. And then Mahavishnu enters as Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu within each and every universe, and from Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu Brahma is manifest. And then Brahma is the secondary creator. So he creates the planetary system and he populates the various living entities according to the karma. He creates the bodies of various living entities according to their karma. In other words, he creates the 8.4 million species of life. So these three Vishnus are for the purpose of facilitating the material creation. And then there is Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. So Brahma is for the purpose of creation, the secondary creation. Vishnu is for the purpose of maintenance, and Shiva is for the purpose of annihilation. But Vishnu's position is special because he is not affected by the modes of nature, whereas Brahma and Shiva can be affected. So, and the third aspect of Vishnu, which is Shirodakshaya Vishnu, he is all pervasive. So there is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu within each and every universe, then there is Shirodakshaya Vishnu who is within all living entities, to the extent within each and every atom also. So Shirodakshaya Vishnu is all pervasive. The example is given of how fire permeates wood. In the same way, Shirodakshaya Vishnu, he pervades everything. So if we take wood, fire is within the wood. So similarly, within everything, there is Vishnu. So without the Supreme Lord being present in everything, the universe actually cannot sustain itself. Or if we take it on a micro level, we take our bodies, without the presence of the spirit soul, the body cannot exist. So like, when a person dies, if they are in the water, they die. After some time, the body sinks because the soul is not present. Similarly, the universe is functioning because of the presence of the super soul. And within each and everything, there is Vishnu there. So, the purpose of the super soul is actually to witness their activities. So the super soul witnesses the activities of the jiva. So there's this example of two birds on a tree. So one bird is trying to enjoy the fruits, whereas the other bird is witnessing the activities of the other bird. And not only is the Paramatma witnessing, but he's also sanctioning our activities according to our karma. And also, the super soul situated within the heart gives knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness to all the living entities. So, depending on what kind of desires we have, the super soul reminds us of our previous desires. It covers us. The super soul covers us because we want to be covered. The living entities want to be in a state of forgetfulness. The reason the conditioned living entity comes to the material world is to forget the Supreme Lord. So because in order to act as God, one has to forget God. So the super soul then plays the part of covering our true identity, so we can try to enjoy separately from Krishna. And it's interesting, Vidura, he asked a question to Maitreya in relationship to this. He asked that, why do all the jivas suffer in the material world despite the fact that the super soul is situated within each and every one of them? Why are the living entities suffering? Or we can look at this question in another way. Prabhupada writes in this purport that, okay, you have a citizen in a state who is being tormented by other citizens. How is that happening despite the presence of the king in the state? Or we can look at it another way. How come is the living entity in so much ignorance? Because the constitutional position of the living entity, that he's full of knowledge. How come he's covered by ignorance even in the presence of the Supreme Lord? So the Supreme Lord is present within each and every living entity as a super soul. Then how come still the living entity is suffering so much? And then Maitreya Muni, he explains that the living entity is suffering. He mentions that the living entity is in distress regarding his self-identity. He has no actual background, like a man who dreams that he sees his head cut off. So, the living entity is actually superfluous to the miseries of material existence. Because the spiritual self and matter actually never come in contact with each other. The spirit soul can never be contaminated by matter. But then the question arises, then how come the living entity is suffering? So Maitreya Muni gives this very nice example of a person who is dreaming that his head has been chopped off. So if we try to look at this closely, actually that's not possible. It's not possible to see one's own head being chopped off. If you see that your own head is being chopped off, that means your head, you're actually hallucinating. Your head is not being chopped off. So, but if one identifies with that dream, then one will naturally suffer. Say if I'm thinking, okay, my head, someone has a sword and he's cutting off my head. And if I identify with that hallucination, naturally it will result in so much suffering. I'll think, if he has cut off my head, okay, now I'm in so much pain. I can see all this blood coming. And so our suffering is actually simply a hallucination. So similarly, we are thinking that we, in the material world, every living entity is thinking, is hallucinating that they are God. Because every living entity is thinking they are God, that's why they are suffering. Because every living entity is trying to become God, first they are thinking they are God and then they are trying to act like that. And because this is a hallucination, the result is they have to suffer. So God means the supreme creator, the enjoyer and the proprietor. That's the definition of God. So the conditioned living entity is trying to act like that, is thinking like that. I am the supreme creator. See how many things I can create with my abilities and my potencies. Man has invented so many things. We have invented the space shuttle. I've invented so many ideas at my workplace. Because of my potency, things have transformed. Therefore, I'm the creator. Or even worse, we think when someone gets married, we think, okay, now I have produced a child. But actually, that child is produced by material nature. We don't have much of a role in producing the child. So, all the man does, he impregnates the woman, and then the rest is done by material nature. We actually have no control over that. But out of illusion, the living entity thinks that I am the creator. Or I am the enjoyer.
Ishvara Bhogi.
So we see Krishna is actually the supreme enjoyer. So therefore Krishna has his rasalilas. So Krishna has his rasalila with the external energy and Krishna has his rasalila with the internal energy. So Krishna is enjoying with his energies. In fact, the creation is also, the acharyas call the creation also as rasalila, because Krishna is actually sporting with his external energy in creating, maintaining and destroying the material universes. And Krishna is also sporting with his internal energy. So the gopis are actually manifestations of the pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. So the conditioned living entity is thinking pervertedly. The conditioned living entity thinks, okay, so actually the material world is a shadow reflection of the spiritual world. That's what it is. It's a shadow reflection. So sometimes when we are walking, and we can see a shadow, but that shadow is not us. The shadow is a reflection of us. But if someone thinks the shadow to be reality, then they are in illusion. So the conditioned living entities are imitating the Supreme Lord in that way, thinking that they're God. So, in other words, the sex life, I was hearing a lecture by Raghunath Maharaj, she was mentioning sex life is basically a way of saying that we are the supreme enjoyer. And then the living entity is thinking they are the supreme proprietor. So So everyone thinks, I actually, this belongs to me. I possess this. You know, I've taken this mortgage. After some years, this house is going to be mine. Or it's already mine, I'm just paying it off. So in this way, the conditioned living entity is thinking they are the supreme proprietor, enjoyer and controller. Or creator. And this is actually the cause of our suffering. So Maitreya Muni explains it very nicely, how we are hallucinating in a dream. We are identifying with the dream-like conditions. So, any questions? Stop there.
Psychologist or a psychiatrist, Carl Jung, mentioned that the dreams can, in his book, Vanity Symbols, that they can lead the way to the future. If you have a dream, it can show you certain things that can happen or things that could become reality.
A dream is basically a combination of your past experiences. That's what Narad Muni describes. So the samskaras you've had in this life and in the previous life, they combine and you come up with some kind of something fancy. Like you've seen gold in a mountain, it combines to become a golden mountain. So dreams are basically a combination of your previous experiences, and the mind just puts it all together and comes up with something very far out. Or you can see yourself winning the Wimbledon, you know, Australian Open. You have played tennis in the past, and you have seen tennis, then, you know, you have seen the tennis stars, and then you imagine yourself to be one. So the dream, before I used to dream, I've won the Australian Open, and I'm carrying this trophy, you know, because I was a tennis enthusiast. So I was, you know, dreaming like that. So the mind comes up with, concocts all these things. And then we identify with that dream, and then we think, oh, I'm so happy right now. I've won the Australian Open. Here's my trophy. Or I've lost it, you know. So all this is actually, it's not real. So similarly, our sufferings in the material world, the so-called sufferings and enjoyments, they're actually not real. The moment we stop identifying with matter, and the moment we stop trying to become God, then we are free from sufferings, though we are situated within the body. We don't identify with the sufferings of the body. Anything else? Yes.
Even while in devotional service, we become fruited. And you know, there's that still the tendency is there to be an enjoyer, we're not suffering, but still don't be some enjoyment.
Okay, yeah, that tendency is actually very strong, because coming to Krishna consciousness doesn't mean, or we're wearing this devotional cloth and living in a temple, or this we have begun to practice, doesn't mean we are free from all our contamination. The contamination is there, we are still thinking like that, but we have to sincerely engage in the process, and we have to learn to persevere under guidance of Vaishnavas. So if we sincerely follow the process strictly, read Srila Prabhupada's books regularly, because that actually reminds us of our true position. The moment we stop hearing in the form of hearing the Bhagavatam class, either a tape or coming to the class, whatever is practical, and reading Srila Prabhupada's books, then we will be very quickly we'll be covered over. Because Maya is very strong. Maya is just looking for an opportunity. So very quickly we'll be covered over, and we'll actually think that we are right. Everyone else is wrong. So a disease, a sick person, in mental illness, the half the problem is in trying to convince the patient that he's sick. He has a mental illness. Once you can convince them, half the battle is won. So when we are covered over with Maya, so even when someone tells us something, it's very hard for us to accept. So if we keep ourselves open to, if I keep ourselves receptive to hearing Krishna Katha and stay in the association of devotees, then we can be safe. And also another means of is to preach Krishna consciousness. Because when we preach Krishna consciousness, then we are forced to become Krishna conscious. So that's, yeah. I was hearing a podcast by Shivaram Maharaj. He was saying, when you preach Krishna consciousness, all the godly qualities develop. You automatically become Krishna. Because you'll require all these skills. You'll have to become patient. You're dealing with people. You'll learn patience. You'll learn tolerance. You'll have to develop the quality of compassion. You'll have to read Prabhupada's books. If you don't know, how can you talk? How can you give a lecture? Or how can you convince someone? And then you'll have to acquire so many other skills also. Cooking, singing, playing instruments. So everything comes. So like that.
In addition, when you preach, Lord is very happy with you. He becomes so happy.
Yeah.
He empowers you to do that job more satisfactorily.
That's right.
You are in good books, Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, so Brahma
can... said that in the sixth canto, in the purport, that Krishna is very pleased with you. That is the best service one can do. Because you are bringing other souls and trying to elevate them.
Yeah, but that also has to be done under the guidance of one spiritual master. How our spiritual master wants us to preach, not the way we want to preach.
Everything under the guidance.
Yeah. Yes.
And so there was someone says, hallucination? We are afflicted by hallucination?
Maitreya Muni says. He gives that example in answer to Vidura's query.
Buddhism also says similar thing, that everything is illusion, and it's just our mind, we are naming everything and every experience, but it's not real. So they pick up from this shastra, this one?
Well, we don't say, we say it's illusory, but it's real. That's the difference. The material manifestation is real, but it is illusory. It is temporary, but it's real. Illusory in the senses. It's here today, tomorrow it's gone. In the past it wasn't there. So there's manifestation and in between unmanifestation. So we acknowledge that it's temporary, but at the same time it's real. Whereas the Buddhists, from what you're saying, is they say it's all a dream. It's not real. That's not actually correct. So what's your question?
So what does it mean when suffering is just an illusion?
From the Buddhist point of view? Oh, okay. So why we are suffering?
No, he says it's an illusion. So if you think that you are suffering.
If you think something you're not, naturally you'll suffer, right? Is it? If you think that, like you can see this, you go to a mental hospital. These days they're not; it's not institutionalized, but back then, maybe in India it still is. You know, a person, you go there, he stands on the desk, and he says, "I'm the president of America," or he says, "I'm Jesus Christ. Everyone surrender to me." So we all know that this is actually a hallucination. He's not that. He's thinking something he's not. And therefore, as a result, either he's in material happiness or distress. So similarly, because we are thinking we are God, so we are suffering. Because we are trying to become that, then we are suffering.
Yes, the same word I'm saying, Buddhism also, they say, like we give designation, we identify objects with different names, we name different experiences, so that's all.
That's true, it's an illusion, but they can't understand that. They don't acknowledge God, first of all. There's no question of soul also. They don't even accept the soul. All they say is, there's just the mind. I'm not very conversant with the Buddhist philosophy. It's there in the... Prabhupada explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a section where Prabhupada gives... You should read that. Prabhupada gives the Buddhist arguments and then he defeats them. You should look at that. Gopanishwar, would you like to add? No? See, it's been quite a while I read that, so I'm not... And right now I'm not very familiar with the Buddhist arguments. Sorry? It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu's pastimes with the Buddhists. It's somewhere over there. I can't remember which section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but it's there. Where the Buddha's head, one of the leader's head was smashed with a plate, you know. A bird took a plate and then threw the plate on his head and then... It's there somewhere. So yeah, we can read that. Yeah, Prabhupada analyzes the Buddhist philosophy. He gives their arguments, then he'll counteract them. So it's worth reading.
Nandan, you mentioned about Vidura. So who is Vidura and how he was born to Shudrani?
So Vidura was Yamaraj in his previous life. And you know the answer. Well, okay, still the answer. Yes, Vidura was Yamaraj in his previous life, and on the earth planet there was a sage of the name of Manduka Muni. So Manduka Muni, in his childhood, he had pierced the rectum of an ant with a pin or something. And so later he was being held trial for that offense. So then he said, why am I being... So his punishment was, correct me if I'm wrong, that he was... What was his punishment? That he'll be dropped on a lance or something? He'll be pierced through the rectum with a sword or with a sharp object, pointy object. And so then he protested, you know, what's this? Why am I being punished like this? So then Yamaraj told him that in your childhood you had, you know, pierced the rectum of an ant. So now you are being punished like this. So he said, for such a small thing, and that also in my childhood, I was so ignorant, you are giving me such a severe punishment. So he cursed Yamaraj to take birth as a Shudra. So therefore, Yamaraj henceforth is Vidura. Anything else? Granthraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki.
It's for the play. It's not a song.